from the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
Even in the middle of the COVID-19 pandemic, the culture wars and the struggle for the pro-life movement continue in America. The late, great Phyllis Schlafly is being portrayed as an enemy of women and social progress in a new series on Hulu. And even as parents are homeschooling their children, Harvard University is calling for an end to all teaching at home. This week on Register Radio, we look at the latest controversies with Register correspondent Loretta Brown and Register editor Elisa Murphy. Hello, I'm Matthew Bunsen, filling in this week for Jeanette DeMello, our editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register. It's a pleasure to be with you. Well, in a new miniseries aired by the streaming network Hulu, the late Phyllis Schlafly, one of the foremost defenders of the family and women in modern times, is portrayed by actress Cate Blanchett as a cold and jealous zealot who helped impede women's progress by preventing the passage of the ERA, or the Equal Rights Amendment. It's just one skirmish in what has been weeks of attacks on traditional values, families, life, and religious liberty. To discuss these many different and interesting stories, we're joined by Register editor Elisa Murphy and Register correspondent Loretta Brown. Hello to both of you.
Hi, it's great to be here.
Hi. Well,
this must be such a fascinating time to be a reporter, not just because of what we're all living through in terms of the pandemic, but because all of the interesting and unexpected stories that seem to have emerged as sort of subtext or sub-stories out of what is the big story of this new century. How's it been for both of you?
I'll just say for myself, here working remotely in New Jersey, very close to Manhattan, where the virus, they say, is flattening the curve there, but we are still seeing many cases. It really is a challenging time being under quarantine, but it's also a time you really feel your journalistic edge come through, because you see how many stories need to be told, especially when we see what you see in mainstream media. To really get a look at some of the real stories and voices and concerns that we see specifically with the Catholic lens. It's been somewhat invigorating for me. I don't know about you, Loretta.
Yeah, I would say it's been a time of growth in some ways, because it has. Yeah, like here in D.C., there have been concerning things. There's been anxiety. There's definitely like I'll be watching, how the coronavirus is affecting the areas around me. And yeah, you get stir crazy. But at the same time, I think there's just I've tried to take the opportunity to really, watch what's happening in the news. And it has been really, I feel like I've been just attuned to these different stories. And it's been interesting to be able to follow, a lot of things going on as this is happening.
Well, Elisa, I really want to start with Mrs. America, the story of Phyllis Schlafly's work to prevent the passage of the Equal Rights Amendment, which, looking back, 40-plus years, seemed at the time almost destined to pass. Her treatment by this series on Hulu has been pretty abysmal, hasn't it?
It really has, and it's kind of a tragedy when you really think of the strength and fortitude that this woman had to really see through the facade of the Equal Rights Amendment and ultimately defeat it. And this is before the internet, before we had social media engines to get messaging out. She really started a grassroots effort to defeat the Equal Rights Amendment. But this series plays fast and loose with her life. It really is a complete fabrication. She was a mother of six, a woman of devotion to her country, her faith, the conservative cause. And, we know the Equal Rights Amendment appears to be a neutral measure, just in the name alone, advocating for equality of women, which is a worthy endeavor, of course. However, the ambiguity of the language disguises significant negative consequences and legal uncertainty, particularly when it comes to protecting the unborn. It was hailed as equality for women. The document ultimately may have forced women to be drafted, and ultimately without the distinction of gender would be dangerous for women. When we think of what we're really facing now with locker rooms, homeless shelters, and the potentiality for domestic violence, it really is something that what would have been very harmful for women. But of course, this came out at the same time where you have Betty Friedan writing The Feminine Mystique. You have the women's liberation movement just getting underway with Gloria Steinem. And it really was Phyllis Schlafly that exposed the truth regarding the Equal Rights Amendment. However, the series really portrays this woman as kind of, you know, many people, I will say, I've been shocked to hear that some people are enjoying it. And of course, this is Hollywood. It's done very well. It has great actors and actresses in it. And they do play Phyllis Schlafly as a powerhouse. But if you know Phyllis Schlafly and what she was, she wasn't this power-hungry, crazed woman. She was really trying to protect the family. And that's something that she really is kind of the pioneer of, the pro-family movement.
Well, and that's one of the things. I mean, she anticipated so many of the problems that were coming down the turnpike, that the list that you gave that could be results of the Equal Rights Amendment, they may not have passed the Equal Rights Amendment itself, but it does seem that culturally, at least, we are witnessing a lot of advances on all of those fronts, from in terms of gender ideology, abortion, and the real demolition of the traditional identities and authentic understanding of men and women.
You know, and it's very true, just because in the last last month alone, putting women under the draft to be drafted has actually been floated within Congress. So these ideas are still alive and fresh. And ultimately, that may have been Hollywood's desire, because interestingly enough, you know, we all watch these great movies and, you know, people want to, with method acting, you think if you had someone that actually knows the source, you would go to them and say, hey, what can I learn about your mom? And of course, we have Anne Schlafly, a delightful woman that still is very much involved in her mother's cause with the Eagle Forum. She made herself available to these Hollywood producers. Nobody wanted to talk to her. And it really goes to show that, you know, this attempt now, when you look at Virginia and other states still trying to pass the Equal Rights Amendment, Hollywood really tries to define Phyllis Schlafly as this power-hungry woman that's kind of confined in this traditional role of being a housewife, and now she's clinging on to this, you know, defeating the ERA just to really bolster her own fame. And that is the farthest thing from the truth. And interestingly enough, you know, there's a great, if anybody has time, as some extra time on their hands, there's a great clip of Phyllis Schlafly giving a speech on how she defeated the ERA. And it's wonderful because at one point she points to a clip where she is actually speaking with Phil Donahue. And Phyllis does point out, at the time, Phil Donahue was bigger than Oprah. But interestingly enough, what occurred is, you know, Phil Donahue asks her very skeptically, so you're telling me that women don't want to be working? And she lays into him very graciously, but she lays into him about, are you telling me that women have more power in a factory line as a factory worker than being the nucleus of the center of their home, their household, and really brings to mind how powerful and how meaningful it is to be a mother. And in this day and age, when you think of the coronavirus and all of us stuck in quarantine, all of these roles are becoming front and center, how much the mother and father are necessary within a home, especially when you have no other resources to use. So it is it's a real shame that they're doing this. And ultimately, it does seem to be a catalyst for spurning this conversation about the Equal Rights Amendment.
Yeah. And it does such a great job, not the show, but I mean, in terms of how they're presenting this, in helping us to understand why they focus on what they do. And one of those things that we're hearing a lot of in the wake of the coronavirus is the question of homeschooling, authoritative parenting, and what it means to have a nuclear family. We're seeing articles about, let's face it, the nuclear family is a disaster. We don't need it anymore. And then up comes this story, an article from Harvard University that basically calls for the banning of homeschooling. And Loretta, what was your take on this article when you saw it?
Well, I was pretty taken aback because she goes through this Harvard professor goes through and talks about how the parents are authoritarian and the child is in this weaker position and needs to be protected. And, you know, the possibility of child abuse, the possibility of like neglected education, and parents kind of just abusing this homeschooling to abuse children or to teach them. She talks about like ideological Christian extreme ideologies. And it almost came, you know, as someone who was homeschooled, I was reading this and I was like, this sounds like someone who comes from just like a totally foreign space and doesn't understand this, just doesn't understand how homeschooling works, doesn't understand people's motivations for it, and doesn't understand kind of the checks and balances that are in place either, or the public school system for that matter. But, you know, what was really striking was that she goes through and she had a lot of statistics that were either faulty or she was misinterpreting. So there was a study on, like, she talks about 90% of homeschoolers were motivated by conservative Christian beliefs. Well, actually, that study said 70% were in a religious category versus non-religious. But when they talked about, like, their reasons for homeschooling, you know, only 16% said it was because of religion. The primary reason cited was safety. And, you know, I know, or, and then 35% said academic or special needs considerations. And it's funny because I just know, having been in, you know, a homeschooling community growing up, I know people who had so many different reasons for, you know, obviously I knew Catholic homeschoolers, but I also knew lots of Protestant homeschoolers, atheist homeschoolers, you know, people who just very intelligent parents who wanted to homeschool their kids according to, like, you know, just more advanced often curriculum than anything they would get at even like a fancy private school. And I think, yeah, it's just,
so
it's something that like, oh, yeah,
hold
go
that
ahead,
thought
go
for
ahead.
1 second. We need to take a break. But when we come back, we're going to pick up this thread as well as the advance of abortion, even in the midst of a COVID pandemic. This is Register Radio. More when we return.
Don't miss a moment of 2020. Try 6 issues of EWTN's National Catholic Register today for free. Stay connected and follow the latest from Washington, D.C., the 2020 elections, along with events from the Vatican and the world. Only the National Catholic Register brings you in-depth news and analysis from a Catholic perspective. Award-winning journalism that goes beyond what you'll find from any secular news service. Try the Register for free today and get it delivered to your home, office, or parish. To get 6 free issues, order online at ncregister.com/radio or call 800-421-3230 and mention code radio. That's ncregister.com/radio or call 800-421-3230 and mention code radio. Don't miss a minute of 2020. Call or click today. The National Catholic Register. Read faithfully.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back. I'm Matthew Bunsen, filling in for our redoubtable editor-in-chief and main host of Register Radio, Jeanette DeMello, who's off this week. I'm continuing my conversation with Register correspondent Loretta Brown and Register editor Elisa Murphy. We've been talking about the new miniseries on Hulu about Phyllis Schlafly, which is almost a microcosm of some of the cultural problems that we're facing today, even in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic, including attacks on homeschooling and the protection of Planned Parenthood and the abortion movement, even while desperately needed medical supplies and resources are being diverted from where they really need to be, which is in the front line of the pandemic. Well, Loretta, I want to come back to you. We were talking about homeschooling and this Harvard report. Why is it so important for people to understand just how wrong this type of thinking is?
I think it's pushing this stereotype of religious homeschoolers that are not well educated, that are prejudiced, bigoted, ignorant. Like, these are all implications or even things she outright says in her piece, this Harvard professor. And it's just so important for people to realize that this is not, you know, she doesn't compare this in a fair way to the flaws of the public school system. You know, so she doesn't talk about, there have been studies about how homeschoolers outperform in test results and college admissions, public school children. You know, so she's not looking at real numbers and real cases. And it's something that I've actually seen a lot and I get a lot. You know, if I tell someone I'm homeschooled, sometimes the reaction is negative. People have all these misconceptions about, you know, oh, this means you were locked in your house and you don't know about all these things, or, you know, people,
completely,
you know, people
non-socialized.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny because it's actually, homeschooling is done for a lot of different reasons and it's just different for different families. And it is, you know, it's very enriching. And I think there are a lot of great kids that come out of that education. And it allows parents some flexibility with curriculum styles. And I think that, like, actual statistics bear out the success of it, as well as my thought is that this article and, you know, Harvard's conference about the dangers of homeschooling, it's almost ironic because they're being very narrow-minded in their approach to it. And there have been Harvard graduates who were homeschooled prior to that, you know, who came out and said that, who came out and said, look, like, I was homeschooled, I went to Harvard, why are you only looking at all this negativity that's not even, you know, not even based in facts? You know, the statistics she's citing, she's interpreting in a very narrow, kind of odd way. And I think in a certain way, it comes out of some prejudice on their part, because mm-hmm. They're just going in assuming the state knows better than parents.
Well, and Alisa, the Register's been following this story closely, but also the whole idea of homeschooling as a legitimate way of educating your children. What are some of the resources that people can go to?
You know, there's a lot of different resources online for homeschooling. I would also... you know, an interesting book that may really shed light on this issue is written by CUA professor Melissa Moschella on to whom she wrote a book called To Whom Do Children Belong? And it really goes into the nature of parents and the role they have in being the primary educators of their children. And it's just, this article was so such a hit on homeschooling at a time where a lot of parents are struggling with the first time of being a teacher to their children. I mean, there's recent articles about parents, you know, freaking out, not knowing how to do it. And as Loretta, you were saying, I mean, nowadays, when you look at the facts of why people are being homeschooled, most of it has to do with having less of a structured environment, not so much testing, but allowing for a real love of learning. And it was shocking, Loretta, you pointed out, you know, this writer says, you know, over 90% are conservative Christians. But she also points to them being extreme religious ideologues who question science and promote female subservience and white supremacy. So that's a pretty loaded thing to say. And when you really look at the real facts of parents that homeschool their children, it's the farthest thing from the truth. And it's just amazing that the timing of this, when a lot of families are grappling with homeschooling. And Loretta, all I know is every time I've ever met anyone that's been homeschooled my entire life, I always think, wow, they're so much more smarter than me, because they are. I mean, honestly, like, I remember in college, some of my closest friends were homeschooled, and they had such a larger look on life, and they were very much more articulate. And I came, you know, from a different background a bit, because I was in public school, but my mother was a teacher. So I was always kind of taught at home in that sense. And then my father too, I mean, kind of reading aloud at the dinner table, you know, stopping you while you're reading to say, so what's going on? So you actually had some listening comprehension. But I mean, these are things that, when we look at the stats of what is, you know, some of the students suffering within public schools, you can really tell this is kind of a one-sided argument and a full-on hit piece, if you ask me, because she doesn't really integrate any of that other side at all.
Well, and there's something of an irony in this, too, that we have the ardent support of the public school system that we see here and the attack on homeschooling as dangerous for children. And yet this is a very closely connected to the abortion movement. To use Rahm Emanuel's, the political advisor, his old comment that never let a good crisis go to waste. Loretta, the Planned Parenthood has actually benefited from the coronavirus, and we're seeing also the protection of Planned Parenthood and other abortion providers as, quote, essential services in this. What does this tell us about our priorities?
Well, it's very concerning. I mean, I think that at a time when a lot of, medical services have to be paused, even stuff, you know, I talked to Dr. Grazi Christie, and she was one of the Catholic Association advisors, and she was telling me about how there a lot of people have operations for things that are actually causing them pain, that, you know, if you look at the FDA guidelines, they said postpone those, you know, things like hip replacements, things like that, that is just, you know, it's not safe or practical right now to go through with those sorts of things. But yet all these abortion providers are using, you know, PPE, personal protective equipment, masks, all of that. They are, you know, putting potentially their employees at risk, their customers at risk, to still be able to sell abortion, to have abortion be available. And of course, there's the killing of the unborn child in abortion that's still going on. And it's also frustrating because I've heard different stories about pro-life protesters who've tried to continue to pray outside the clinics at 6 feet distance, you know, from each other, from everything. And they've at times been stopped as well and even arrested. And so it's frustrating because you would have, I don't know, if you were being optimistic, you would have thought, well, maybe with all their talk about concern for safety, concern for women, Planned Parenthood and other abortion providers would put a pause on things, you know, but a lot of them haven't. A lot of them are just continuing, and they're using this time to push for the ability to do abortions that, you know, the Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, has set, have restrictions on. These telemedicine abortions, right, these abortion pill abortions, they have restrictions on that because they can be dangerous. There's all sorts of ways, if you are getting abortion pills online through the mail, that things can go wrong and you need a doctor on hand. And, you know, aside from the abortion lobby's efforts to say, oh, it's totally safe, you know, I kind of took a look at the abortion pill and the complications that can arise, and it surprised me. I didn't even realize some of the things that could go wrong with it. But there's just all sorts of, like, you don't know if you have an ectopic pregnancy. If you do, that's can be so problematic if you attempt an abortion pill without an ultrasound and you have an ectopic pregnancy. You know, that's a big concern. Another one is if you aren't tracking your menstrual cycles very carefully and you are farther along than you think, that's incredibly dangerous because you can only use these abortion pills up to, I think it was 13 weeks. There's the combination of, like, remaining open and then this irresponsible push for something that, if you really look at it, even among, you know, some more far left outlets, like Vice News did a report, a kind of a study of their own, where they thought, okay, well, maybe this is a new frontier, getting pills online. So they tried it. And in about half the pills of one, the first kind of pill, I think, that you take to start the abortion, mm-hmm. half of those had, like, lower than the effective dose. So, you know, so even they found defects in what they were ordering, which you can't just, like, play with that. So it's, it's
it was something of a statement that Alexis McGill Johnson, the acting president and CEO of Planned Parenthood, actually said in an interview that it's a silver lining in this pandemic that Planned Parenthood and many other, quote, health providers have been able to really lean into telehealth infrastructure and provide service. At a time when those resources, especially in the clinics and where elective surgeries are being postponed, that the abortion industry should be so protected. What are we to make of that?
Well, you know, what's so scary about this situation, you know, with that quote you just referenced, Matthew, calling this a silver lining, this uptick that Planned Parenthood is experiencing with specifically with chemical abortions and telemedicine during this time, when there are these dangers involved in what, you know, people can experience, you know, there's so many other procedures that are being canceled. Loretta, as you were saying, I did read your piece, and, you know, Dr. Gracie Christie mentions also even cancerous lesions, things that are really, really painful. And it's just a real insight into what Planned Parenthood is all about. And it is all about abortion. But one thing I really was, it was heartwarming to read this morning, was actually over 130 members of Congress writing a brief, a letter to, they're asking the administration to defund Planned Parenthood. And it's signed on by many pro-life groups. So this, I think, at least as we see the abortion lobby really band together. I mean, you've seen now other actresses and celebrities coming out and doing PSAs for them and really talking about this essential role that abortion is. At least we now have the pro-life groups banding together with pro-life members of Congress to make a stand for life, especially in this era where things are very dark and people are suffering. I mean, I can't imagine having some sort of illness and not being able to get what you needed. However, you know, if I wanted to, you know, with abortion, having that at your fingertips, it really it's a very sad state of affairs because people are really the value of life. In this day and age, when all we read about are people dying from a virus, to then be applauding abortion is just really mind-boggling.
Well, it's a reminder, too, of the importance of the culture of life and that the pro-life movement in America. We're going to have to leave it there. So I want to thank both of you for a great conversation today. Loretta, very quickly, what are you working on?
Oh, well, I'm writing about, you know, Biden's campaign, something that maybe isn't as much in people's thoughts with this virus, but talking about some of the issues with his Catholic faith, communion reception, and, you know, some of the stances he's taken against Catholic teaching and how the bishops have dealt with that in the past and how they might deal with that, you know, in the coming months. So it's something, you know, we still should keep an eye on is this the 2020 election is still coming up, but in these just very uncertain times.
Well, and for those who want to follow your stories, and I know, Elisa, you're always contributing, especially in our blog. So thank you for that and keeping on top of everything else that's happening in our digital assets. You can go to ncregister.com. Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register, again, at ncregister.com. You can also listen to this program via our podcasts. Thanks so much for joining me here on Register Radio, here on EWTN. For Jeanette DeMello, our editor-in-chief, and our producer, Jeff Burson, I'm Matthew Bunsen. Until next week, please take care and God bless.